Welcome to Took Talk, a video podcast by the band Took, and brought to you by Black Frog Media. We chat with the best in the music industry from yesterday and today, with a focus on the good old days of Canadian rock. This episode originally streamed live on Tuesday, June 8th, 2021 on Facebook Live. Now, here are your hosts, Todd, Brent, Shane, Corey, and Darren.
Hey, everybody.
Hi.
Welcome to Took Talk, episode 58. What's going on with Todd?
It's a fourth wall experience we're happening right now.
Wait a minute. Where did Todd go? Okay, so
this
disclaimer.
Is Took Talk with, yeah,
there
Corey,
he is.
Explain what's
okay.
going on here.
Disclaimer, Darren is not with us today, so I'm left with the controls. I've never done this before, and I don't know what happened there, Todd, but that was pretty awesome.
I played that, and then it said, you've been removed. I assume that maybe I broke some kind of...
Because you instead of looking like you, it was the video, the intro video playing.
Yeah, because I was doing this.
Oh, okay. That's why I removed you, because I thought we were having a problem.
Isn't it funny? Look at how delayed it is. It's so funny to watch.
Oh, yeah.
I like watching this once in a while just to see the crazy attempt to try and put subtitles under us.
What about the comments? Can you see them, Todd, there? Because, Corey, you said you can see them. We usually miss out.
I can see them.
But I think the guy who's running the show has to control all that.
That's
no, I can actually turn them on for everybody, but I need my damn glasses to read them.
You got to get the chain. You got to get the canasta.
Exactly. I need the chain. I got this too, the librarian chain. That's a good thing to have.
Oh, go
yeah. Big game tonight.
Louise, the Knights, yeah.
We're only going to talk about the future. Let's not talk about the past. So, big game tonight.
What is that at now? I'm so bad at this.
So, we're tied.
2-2. Yeah.
Yeah, tied 2-2. And the game tonight's in Colorado for the Knights.
That's right.
And
that's right.
So, Vegas. But, Todd, we should go to the game this week. When is
I've
it?
You know that.
Today's Tuesday, so maybe Thursday. We should go to a game together.
I think so. It's got to be like a hot ticket.
Yeah, I'm jealous because Frank Sidoras has been going. Our other friend guitar player in
the guy that didn't even know what hockey was 5 years ago is now like at every game.
That's not fair.
I knew what hockey was. I knew what hockey was.
It's his team because he's local, born and raised, and the team is born and raised. So yeah,
he's cool. He's very spoiled to have a team that has performed so well since its inception. I mean, that team is. Just a very good team. What are you going to say? It's a great team.
Yeah. Yeah. The real reason Darren isn't here is because he's still hasn't gotten over last night, the Jets.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. That's rough. Yeah. That's
losing
rough.
The, in 4 games straight, right?
I thought we weren't talking about the past, Corey.
I'm not going to talk about the past, but I want to talk all of it.
Yeah.
I wanted the Jets to win, obviously.
Yeah, that was rough.
It happens. My Capitals were out like a long time ago, so.
Yeah, what are you going to do? What are you going to do?
Yeah. So all I can comment on is the greatness of the crowd factor for Colorado. Well, most of the team, I think all the U.S. teams have a almost full capacity. Knights for sure, the last 2 games, full 19,000 people. So good for hockey, good for the people here that Todd and I are in Vegas right now and that get to, enjoy the games.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hopefully everything's safe and they're enjoying some hockey. God bless.
But I heard today there was our good friend Kathy Kennedy from in Winnipeg, who is always in the know with the news because she's with CJOB. She said something about today there's a lifting of the provincial quarantine between provinces in Canada.
Okay.
So I hope I'm not speaking out of context here, but I'm told that there was, I didn't even know that you couldn't go between provinces. So
Ontario had shut off both Quebec and Manitoba.
Right. So I guess that's being lifted. And there was talk today of a vaccine passport to alleviate when you come back to Canada, you could actually show that passport because you have a vaccine and then you can come back to, I guess you could go to Vegas and you could come home and you wouldn't have to quarantine.
Did they say a date as to when that could possibly, when people could come down here?
I heard later this month.
Oh, killer.
That would be amazing.
Does that mean we can go up there?
Well,
as soon as I can go up there, I'm out of here. Yeah.
Well, we have. We can't announce it yet because it's. We'll let the gig itself announce it. But we all, as you guys know, we have a date in Canada in August. So
that's right.
You know that all that news today is beneficial for all of us. Oh,
fully vaccinated Manitobans. That's a great name for a band, by the way. FVM are playing tonight at the.
That's great. That would be a great name. And now travel without having to self-isolate for 2 weeks upon return to the province with a new immunization card that will be available to people 2 weeks after receiving their second dose. Makes sense. In addition to the travel benefit, fully I'm reading this because we have an audio podcast too, and if we were just silently reading it, fully vaccinated Manitobans will also be allowed increased visitation at healthcare facilities if both the patient and visitor are fully vaccinated. Yeah, I mean, it's what's happening in the U.S. The vaccines work. Get vaccinated. Everybody can go back to normal, and we can start playing shows and go visit our families, right?
Exactly. I'm looking forward to, I haven't been to Canada. Well, none of us. Well, Fitzy was up there for a while, but I haven't been to Canada in, it's got to be pushing 16 months now, 15 months at least. Yeah, it's bananas.
Well, all of us together were in Regina.
Regina, right,
in
Saskatchewan, yeah, for Telemiracle in March of last year. But
that's right.
Yeah. But I haven't seen my family since the Christmas before, 2019.
Ooh. Yeah. Holy.
So, yeah.
we should make mention of one of our previous guests got inducted in the Canadian Music Hall of Fame. Jannard?
That is true. That is absolutely true.
That's so great. That was awesome. Junos, right? Was that this weekend?
The Junos, yeah, exactly. Yep.
How has that not already happened? I'm actually...
I know. Well,
I assume that was old
news.
She
seems to think it's happened too soon because she says, you know, I'm too young to be inducted in the Hall of Fame. But honestly, you know, it's nice for a change that a person doesn't have to die to be honored, you know?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it seems to be happening a lot with that Rock and Roll Hall of Fame down here and all that kind of stuff, too, where it's like, oh, yeah, we should put those guys in Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And it's like, you know, hopefully, you know, bands like Deep Purple or whatever the long list of Eddie Trunk's complaints. Let's call him right now. We'll talk about this for 4 hours.
Exactly.
UFO is not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. This is some bullshit. Yeah. But Jan certainly deserves to be in the Canadian Hall of Fame. Like I said, I'm surprised she wasn't already there, but there you go.
Yeah, exactly. But she's such a great person. Obviously, anyone who's seen her on our show knows how gracious she is.
Twice.
And yeah, twice.
Hell of a Canadian Jeopardy player.
Oh, yeah. She's very good.
Yeah.
Very good.
I think she was my partner, wasn't she? I can't remember.
She was my partner. Yeah, I couldn't answer anything right except for the other teams.
Yeah. It's always that way, isn't it? Yeah. It's like the other team. Yeah. You're like, I know this. Why can't I get that?
Yeah. It's almost time for Jeopardy again. We've had it.
Well, don't expect it today because I'm just barely hanging on with all these controls that I got to do. And
so, nice job, Corey. Nice job.
I'm able to do this.
Hey, hi, Ellie.
Hi, Ellie.
Or
hi,
Eli.
I'm not sure. Yes. Gloria agrees with us.
Hey, yeah.
Gloria. Hi,
Gloria from Edmonton. I think she's from Edmonton, isn't she?
She's from the Hat. Medicine Hat.
Oh,
the Hat.
Okay. There you go. I got fired from Medicine Hat once.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah.
Tell the story.
My band, me and Kurt Dahl from Age of Electric, and our pre-Age of Electric band, we played one of those kind of week-long cover gigs. And we played Monday, and then it was like, you know, don't bother coming back tomorrow. It was the last week of that band, too. It was like one of those kind of like, this is the last week. We're going to go out to Medicine Hat, play this last, you know, week of shows, and then go home. And I just remember riding the Greyhound back with Kurt to Regina, oh, well. Yeah. What are you going to do? We get to go
Everybody gets fired at least once, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There and Banff. Those are the only two places I've ever been fired from. Banff, we got fired because we became an original band. You know, we were doing our own thing. And then we started getting hired for these like kind of, you know, do you guys know any Tragically Hip? No, we only know our own songs now. That didn't last very long either.
And that's why my band got fired was because we tried to play our original set. We're like, we want to play, the first set's got to be totally original. And then after that, we'll be a jukebox, you know?
Right.
And,
those were weird times in Canada because all the clubs that we played were all top 40 bands. Like, everybody was meant to play. I'm sure Frank, our guest, might have some thoughts on this back in his early days because, I came up playing like high school dances and weird things like that, and it was always Summer of 69 and, you know, the same old Rebel Yell or whatever, the, you know, a lot of the same songs that bands play now in cover gigs are still were with the songs we played back then.
Yeah.
But what's it? It was Rebel Yell, but before there was Money Money.
Money Money. That was definitely a high school band song.
We're here for a good time, and I think our guest is going to know something about that.
We're here for a good time.
That was always a last set song.
Raise a Little Hell. Hand Grenade. There was a million songs by Trooper that were, you know, you could just slay with those songs over and over and over again.
Totally. We should, just before we get our guest on, we should just mention Shane, because he's not here either today.
Who?
Just kidding. He goes missing so often, it's like, you know, we do miss Shane. He is out and about today, and I'm sure he'll be back next week.
He's always having adventures. I never know what he's up to.
He's definitely having an adventure. I think he's like in some national park somewhere.
Probably.
I had my turn a couple weeks ago, and now it's his turn.
Yeah, sure.
And Darren is also having a great time by the lake.
Yeah.
Because Winnipeg...
Nursing is Winnipeg jet wounds.
Yeah, exactly. Because Winnipeg is getting their day of summer today.
As they should. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Okay, so let's do it. Should we get our guest on?
Absolutely.
Well, we haven't had a representative from Trooper on the show in over, you know, the year that we've been doing this. So it only seems fitting that we, you know, we hear about Trooper stories, right?
Is Trooper in the Canadian Hall of Fame?
I don't know. That's a good question.
I'm about to raise hell if that's not the case.
How much?
Just going to like suddenly be like an
a lot or a little hell.
I'm going to raise a lot of hell. I'm going to raise a little hell, I think.
Yeah. Okay. So you know, the funny thing is, until about maybe a year ago, I didn't even know Trooper had two singers.
Yeah.
Two lead singers, you know, like they all sang like birds, and that's why the harmonies were so great. But I didn't know there were two lead singers. And so I thought it was the same guy singing all the songs until I went and looked at some old videos, you know, from the past, from the 70s and when Trooper did a reunion with all the original members. I got to see, like, In the Moment That It Takes and Round Round We Go, and realize how amazing the keyboard player was at singing.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
And he's if you listen to those videos, he's such a great singer, perfect pitch, and such a rich resonance to his voice.
Totally.
Yep. And he's done a lot of stuff since Trooper. He's fronted his own band. That was really kind of cool to see. Body Electric.
They're
and
great. Yeah.
And Mark LaFrance playing drums.
That's right.
Another guest was also on the show. Exactly. So without further ado, let's get Frank Ludwig on. Come on in, Frank.
Hey, look at that. Nice to see you.
Yes.
Good to see you.
No, the true old Troopettes have not made it into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Oh,
it's a source of, well, quite a lot of people, you know,
that
think we ought to be. And but, you know, that's the way it goes. But luckily, we're all getting close to death, and so maybe posthumously we'll get in there.
Trooper isn't in the Hall of Fame. You know, how many hits did you guys have?
Well, I know at least 10.
Yeah, absolutely.
There you go.
You know, pretty decent, and a couple of them have hung around and, you know, still get airplay, so it's kind of nice. You know, at the end of the day, people are still getting enjoyment from the songs, and that's pretty cool.
Absolutely.
It's more important than... I actually missed out on... Well, the band missed out on everything. We got nominated 75, I think it was, for Best New Band.
Yeah.
And the Junos. And everybody was coming up to us as we're sitting at the table. Oh, you guys, congratulations. You guys are just the best. And then, you know, so when the winner of the Best New Band is, we're all sort of getting ready. and it was a duo who weren't even a band. They were some Toronto session guys, and they had done a cover of the theme to an American TV show. And they just covered it. But because it was well known, it sold a lot, I guess. And they said, well, sure. Anyway, they won. And there was just, it was almost like the entire room kind of went,
Wow.
So we didn't get that one. And you only get one kind of kick at that can, unless you're Burton Cummings, because he won for Best New Singer 10 years after the Guess Who. Flew in the face of history. And of course, then the next one was 79, and Trooper did win Best Band or something.
Yeah.
Best
group
album
of the year or something like that.
Group of the year. Thank you.
Yeah, I think that's what it was. Yeah.
And of course, the funny thing about that whole thing, I'm sitting at home watching the show, and they get up there, and Rob Deans was my replacement after I left, and he says, "I want to thank Frank Ludwig for his Juno," which I thought was hilarious.
I heard he got booed too.
He did get booed. Yeah, there was kind of like, ooh.
Oh no!
Oh my God!
I talked to him years later when he left. I said, "Oh, so Rob, why'd you decide to leave Trooper?" He says, "Oh, pretty much for the same reasons you did." Oh, okay, I get it. Yeah. Anyway, but so he's got my Juno somewhere.
That's some BS. You got to go take that thing back.
Oh, speaking of which, I got a major complaint about you guys. I got to make.
Okay. Okay. Great.
Oh, yeah, I might as well get right into it here. Well, you have to realize that for Trooper, another area of sensitivity is this whole toque business. And what you have to realize, you wouldn't know in a million year this, because you didn't intentionally do this to insult us. But the deal is, Hot Shots, at the time, was the biggest selling album in Canadian history.
Yeah.
You know what beat us? Finally sold more than us.
The dog. Sorry, say that again. Who beat you? Bob and Doug. Oh.
With their damn tukes.
Oh, yeah.
Outsold Hot Shots. So
that record outsold Hot Shots?
It did.
Oh, my God.
You know, mind you, years later, everybody did. You know, Adams and Loverboy and on and on, sold more. But that was, but in our day, of course, there were only 15 people in Canada. So, you know, to sell half a million copies.
15 people, yeah. Every person owned a copy of Hot Shots. So that,
yeah. I think it's one of the greatest album covers. I still remember it totally. As a kid. Like, it's killer. Like, the logo and just the whole design actually is a pretty cool.
Well, that was an actual AR-15. So that album should have done a lot better in the U.S. that was an anti-gun comment, guys. Just sorry.
I got that.
Never shy away from the politics. Yeah.
Before its time. It was before its time. Yeah.
Before. Yeah. Exactly.
Hey, where are you right now, Frank? Where's home for you? are you squatting in someone's house? Where are you?
Yeah. Well, you know, rock guys can't afford our own place. I live in a place called Sawasin.
Oh, okay. So you're down there. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, starts with a T, right?
For all your TSAWWASSEN.
I know it well because I used to take the ferry over to Bowen Island all the time when my family was living over there. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we have a place on Pender Island. You know, you do the milk run, you leave Tawasin, then you hit Galliano, and you hit Maine, and then you hit finally Pender. It's the milk run. And every so often, when I'd be coming back from Pender, the next stop on the milk run was Salt Spring. And so I'd come back to Vancouver and there would be Bill Henderson from Chilliwack and he'd be coming over to do a gig. And so we'd get to chat for a little while.
That's great. Yeah. That is funny. A lot of my friends are now living Main Island, Pender. Like they just love the island thing. Al from Prism's out there somewhere on some island. I don't even know where the hell he is, but
maybe Jim Valance too.
Valance probably, yeah.
I thought he's still in Vancouver, but
probably has a place in Vancouver still, I'm sure. But
that's true. Yeah, we were going to retire there, but my wife needs to be closer to doctors, so that dream didn't pan out. But
so we can actually. Are you telling me, as a musician, I can actually retire someday? Is that what you're telling me?
Oh well, I taught school for 20 years. That's
that'll do it.
I've got a pension. Yeah,
there you go.
Nice. Wow.
Mind you know what? I actually got $14 from streaming services this past.
That's a case of beer or something.
No, not that much.
I'm getting Netflix for a month.
I haven't bought beer lately, eh?
Yeah. No, I have not bought beer lately. That's amazing. So what was I going to say? So I guess you remained always kind of West Coast guy then, because you grew up out there as well, right?
Well, I spent a little over a year in Toronto.
Okay.
With a band called Brutus.
That's right.
We had a song, Mama, Mama, you sure look good to me. I don't know if you guys remember that
one. Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah.
That was the first song I was ever involved in that actually got on the charts and stayed there for a little while.
That's so cool.
Frank, that was awesome. I just got to say that was just awesome just now. Can you do, darling, darling?
Darling, darling. No. See, what's really funny, because I've been doing a bunch of these things, and on my website, I did an acoustic guitar version of Round Round We Go, which was kind of fun because I'm not much of a guitar player, so it took me a little while. But what was neat about it is I had always wanted in the song to actually have a round. So I had round, round, we round.
Oh, yeah.
Round, we
round.
So I was able to do that. And then the next thing I did, I think it's also, it was on YouTube. I thought, you know, I want people to know a little bit about how songs come about. This is sort of the teacher in me. And so I actually did a version with the original lyrics. And we just had, I was just mentioning to Corey that I'm doing, we haven't launched it yet, but we've been collecting pre-recorded, I guess you call it a podcast. The show is going to be called Jules Rules. And because the host is, although I'm the techno host, she's the host, is Julie Brown, who is a radio person for years out of Toronto and Vancouver, as was our other co-host, a guy named Otis Gyrie, engineer and radio guy. And And now I've completely lost what I was going to go on about. Oh, well, that's what happens when you get into your 70s, guys. I'm warning you. And it wasn't from over-medication or anything.
Like that. We were just talking about versions of your songs with acoustic.
So thank you. Well, so we had Howie Victor's on, who was from The Collectors back in pre-Chilliwack. And he had a song which I don't know if you'd ever heard. We called "Look at a Baby." What did you see? What did you see? Looking at a baby, and then this great line: "I can see the world the way that I would like the world to be." Mm. And I was telling him that when I wrote "Round Round We Go," I had "Looking at a Baby" in my head, and my original lyrics were were basically about the circle of life, and it was did you ever see a young child openly accept all the world he sees, trying so hard to please? Once in a while I stop to ask why. Where do the children go? Too soon they're growing old, and I feel my head is spinning round, round, round we go.
Round, round we go.
Round, round we go. Oh, darling, darling.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
And wow.
That was the original, and then as we were... it looked like it was going to go into pre-production. I'd be driving out. Trooper would rehearse out in Langley in this shed or garage or whatever you call it. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, that's a little schmaltzy. Maybe I'll make it a little about a relationship that's kind of going nowhere. And so I did change up the lyrics. But now when you ask me to sing Round Round We Go, I kind of automatically go into, you know, the thing about the children.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
That's amazing.
So interesting. Yeah. Wow. It's so interesting to hear because it puts a totally different spin on it, but it's really, really cool. Like,
well, what came out, of course, was like, you know, I kept the...
so cool.
You know, the chords stayed the same.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah,
just hit it out.
Yeah,
got me singing, man. That song is so good.
That's such a great song.
I think it's the best Trooper song. to be honest.
It's a really well-written song, for sure.
You have very discriminating ears. you know, it's sort of funny, because years later, it's kind of like, I think I'm writing better stuff now, you know, but of course, I don't have a record label, I don't have a manager, I don't have anything except my own dreams. What is that? The dream never dies, just the dreamer is going to, anyway.
Yeah.
You're probably missing the black leather pants too.
There you go.
They're still hanging in the closet. I never throw it away. The lining is all kind of rotted out. I can get them on one leg. You know, it's like, my waist was about like that in those days, and now my. As Benny Hill used to say, he'd sit at the piano and say, "Oh, three octaves."
So how does that work? I always wonder this as a piano player, because you know, when you actually are a skilled and learned piano player, which I'm assuming you probably started at piano as a child, and you get like this.
I didn't start till I was nine. Which is an old child. And the reason for that was that when I was six, my uncle, who in Edmonton owned the big record store, or not record, sorry, a music store in there. It was called Robinson and Sons. A UFO went by. That was weird.
Tic Tac.
They've landed in Tawasin, maybe. He gave me an accordion when I was six.
Wow. Okay.
And I couldn't lift it. It was too heavy.
Sure.
And so nothing happened. And then finally, when I was nine, I think my parents said, "Well, until you're big enough to lift the accordion, would you like to take piano?" And I said, "Oh, you know, okay, maybe." And I didn't really want to do that. So they said, "Well, how about you do group lessons?" So I actually, at that time, we were living, you know, I'd grown up in Chemainus, but we were living for 2 years in Vancouver, and I would bicycle down to this group lesson, and it was okay because there was about six of us who didn't want to learn to play piano.
Collective.
We had something in common.
Yeah, exactly.
I can still remember, I would bicycle. It was in Carisdale, which is a part of Vancouver, and I would ride my bike. It was cool. I had the little streamers out the handlebars. Quite often you'd attach the, you know, a clothes peg with a playing card on the wheel.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was a happening dude. Anyway, so I'd go off to that. And one time I'm coming back from my lesson. I'm just turboing. And I see this guy off to the right, the kid. And I said, "He looks kind of suspicious." Hey, he throws a stick. And it goes right through the front wheel and it jams on the forks. And so I'm going along this way, just a complete flip.
Oh my God.
And I get up and I'm scraping the pavement off my face.
Oh my God.
I see the kid disappearing around the corner.
Oh my God.
I didn't realize I was in such pain I wouldn't have killed him because I couldn't have caught him. So I think I went home and said, "Do I have to go to piano lessons?" Anyway, so then when we moved over to Chemainus, I did start taking, you know, proper piano lessons. And by the time I was 16, yeah, I was pretty good. In fact, I took a year out after grade 12 and then went into music at UBC. And I could play classical music pretty well. I mean, I never, up to that point, my whole deal was, if I have to practice, I'll do an hour a day, but I'm going to get up in the morning, wake up the entire household with my practice so that after school I can go play with my friends.
Yeah,
right.
You've got to have your priorities right.
You know? Yeah, totally. That was the same in my household. Practice first thing in the morning so you could do, you know, go to hockey or whatever and after school.
As a skilled piano player, though, is it interesting? The thing that interests me is when suddenly there's rock and roll in a 1-4-5 kind of, like, it must seem so like rudimentary in and of itself when you decide that, you know, you want to play in a rock band or something like that. Is it a whole other thing? Because I don't really play keyboards. I always find it like you're kind of like a sixth degree black belt and you're going to go, like, you know, run around with some yellow belts. Kind of, it feels like.
that makes you a teacher. Well, the interesting thing, of course, is the thing that did the transition for me, because I was, you know, my sister was 4 years older. And so it was like she was getting into the rock and roll and stuff. And it was like, you know, I better be. You know, I'm doing the, well, actually, I used to, you know, Beethoven. Rock and stuff. But anyway, and then the two songs that triggered me to think, the first one was Honeycomb by Richie Valens. Honeycomb by, I forgot it. But anyways, oh, the Lord made the bee, and the bee made the honey, and the honey bee looking for a home. Oh, it's honeycomb. Anyway, yeah, some reason, I just like the way the words kind of flew up. And then the one that really did it was Jailhouse Rock.
Elvis. Yeah.
And so I was kind of getting primed. And then what happens is the Beatles came out. It was like, oh, I'm gone. This is it. So immediately, being, as you mentioned, a reasonably experienced, keyboard player, I took up the guitar. And it never occurred to me in my first band to play piano. And it's just as well, because have you ever tried lifting an acoustic piano? Besides which, when our first band, we would do our gigs. And we would all travel, and by this, I had my parents, Morris Oxford. Now, you know what a Morris Minor, that little car?
Okay, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They had a Big Daddy one, which was the Morris Oxford. And we would get the drum kit in there, the four of us, and our PA system, everything in that one car. So can you imagine? So there was no way a keyboard was going to go in there.
No.
And so I played guitar. And my first, and how I got my guitar, of course, is I traded in the accordion.
Oh, wow. The accordion was started the journey in the first place.
Yeah. There's an accordion in every family in Canada, though. Everybody had an accordion, right? Like, just somebody played it.
Well, guess what I just bought recently? And I got it through a friend who said, are you interested? I got a MIDI accordion.
Whoa.
Oh, wow.
Which I'd always wanted to know, what is it? Does it work off the buttons or does it work off the keys and, just be a monophonic thing? And I haven't got it yet because he went into the hospital and it's sitting in Victoria.
Oh, wow.
So I'm kind of looking for it because I'll tell you what I do have. You'll notice, by the way, I can't stay on one track or something. that's partly age, or it could be ADHL. Attention deficit Ludwig. I think that's it. Oh, by the way, you guys, speaking of which, you guys were talking before you let me on about name fully vaccinated being a good band name. I thought my new band will be called One Shot Ludwig. I had my first Pfizer shot. Anyway, okay, so back to what were we talking about? So the guitar is
you sold your accordion for your first.
Yeah. Yeah, I got this thing. It was a K guitar, which of course is right up there with.
Yeah.
What do you mean? Yup. Have you ever seen a K?
Everybody has a K. Yeah. I have a K almost, in my closet right now.
Almost everybody all the old rock and rollers always talk about K guitars. They were a fairly affordable. I think they might have been Japanese, weren't they?
I don't know, but mine was $45.
Oh wow!
Oh yeah, and it was like playing a 2x4. The strings, the strings were like, 6 feet off the fret.
Oh no.
And I know it, of course, in those days, and you guys are so, you young'uns, nobody knew anything in my time. So nobody, knew how to play guitar. So the very first song we learned, and of course, this is how the mind works, was a song called Wild Weekend. Hmm. And it's a sax solo. Da da ba da 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 da. Bum, ba, da, da, saxophone. Anyway, so I learned that. So I'm playing the whole melody on the E string. Bink, 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 bink. And of course, the strings are so far off the frets, and I'm having to smash them down. My fingers would be bleeding.
Oh, man.
And the strings would break. So every time, I spent more time practicing in practice. Replacing the E string, because nobody, it didn't occur to go dee da da across the frets, right? Or across the strings. It's like nobody told us that.
Right.
And it was really pathetic. Anyway, so I finally got rid of it. And I played guitar, in that first band. And then when I went over to Vancouver to as I say, I took a year out of grade 12 because I didn't know what I wanted to do. And then I went to first year music, and I got in a band that was based out of Richmond. And at that point, it was like, oh, I should play keyboards. And so I got a Vox Supercontinental.
Awesome.
You ever seen those suckers? And of course, the reason I got it was nothing to do with its keyboard. It was because Mike Smith of the Dave Clark Five played that. And first of all, it had nice chrome legs, which came apart, and so it was portable and it wasn't too big. But what was really cool is the color of the keys was reversed, so the black notes were white and the white notes were black. I know what I was going to tell you. See, the mind goes back and forth. what I do have in my studio, which I can't bring it in here. Too bad I don't have a separate camera. I have a piano organ.
Oh, wow.
Made by Farfisa. What it is, it's an accordion and it's quite loud, noisy, because it has its built-in suction. It has the keys, like an accordion, and then a little thing about the same length as a melodica, and I've actually used that quite a lot. In fact, it's on the last song I put out is just about a month, 2 months ago now. It was a song called "The Day They Closed the Old Mill Down."
Right,
I saw that,
and that actually has the piano organ in it, and I use it for things like if I'm doing kind of Celtic or stuff that you with it from Nova Scotia.
Sure,
I use that, and it's sort of a cross between an accordion and I'm trying to think what one of those other instruments is, but or like a whatever. Yeah. And so I use it for sort of Canadiana music, and it's really neat. So I have that. No, what were we talking about? Oh, it's gone.
It doesn't matter.
Let's go back to when you decided you wanted to play in rock bands, and you said that you, you started to touch on that. But how did it all lead up to getting in with Trooper?
The Beatles, I suppose, is probably what kind of kicked that off. I guess.
And Elvis, right?
Well, and still to this day, the sense of melody, and also just the subject matter. It's like I know love is universal, and how does that usually work out? Which makes for country, as a matter of fact, one of my new songs is called "Is This Blues Enough for You?" do I need more dirt underneath my fingernails? Do I need more sweat on my brow? Should I pay a debt to society by spending a night in jail or something like this? And should I call the governor on the telephone saying, please, won't you set me free? my dog has died, and my dog has died, and my cat is stuck in a tree. Is this blues enough for you, baby?
That's awesome. I love it.
Yeah, it's a pretty neat tune. And you got Nick Dallavincenzo played the lead guitar solo on it.
Nice.
And cool. It's very a lot of fun. Yeah. So I like to write stuff with a bit of a sense of humor and also maybe just a kind of a different kind of subject matter. I've written love songs. Back to You, which is on the Flying Colors album.
Yeah. Right. Nice.
Yeah.
I love Flying Colors. That's a great
one. Thank you. Yeah, that particular song kind of shows where my mind is at, because it wasn't so much about, coming back to you, but it was wordplay. And so that song was kind of inspired by My Fair Lady. The musical, because in there's a thing where it's the rain in Spain falls mainly on the plain, and he's trying to teach this whatever side of London girl to be, to sound proper.
Right.
And so I love that onomatopoeia or whatever that is. Mm-hmm. So in the lyrics to Back to You, well, also there's a line in there that refers to another detour here. When you're on the road, you're bored. Especially in those days, the trooper days in the 70s there, you know, no phones, no video games.
No.
So you're just sitting there, and if you read, you know, you'll get sick, you know, the motion of the vehicle.
Right, yeah.
So you're basically sitting there thinking, oh, this stretch from Drumheller to Medicine Hat is really a stretch, you know.
No, I know.
And of course, and then you have lots of time to think, why am I in a van the next 12 hours with people who I really do not like? And I used to, in the early days, I'd be driving along, and I was, you know, about, you know, 98 pounds and had no money for food. I used to, you know, we'd play the clubs, and I'd be away from home. So, you know, we were making big bucks, 75 a week. So right. I would send 70 home for the family to pay the bills, and
wow.
I would
pay
$5 a week. And so what I would do is I would buy one package of Carnation instant breakfast and a quart of milk. And I would try to make that last at least 5 days. And then I'd go into the club at night, and they would have peanuts on the table.
Wow.
And 7-Up. And of course, so that's, I would kind of surreptitiously, oh, hey, oh, so how you, what's it like? Oh, God. How bad is that? Anyway, so what were we talking about?
That'll keep you thin. Man, oh, man.
Well, no kidding. And then it wasn't until Brutus, and I went down, and the drummer, Danny Smokovich, I think it was his name, I got to stay. He lived with his grandma, Baba.
Sure, Baba, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Baba. And in 1 month, staying with him at Baba's place, I gained 20 pounds.
Of course.
Oh, it was phenomenal. Well, she would make a dinner for us before we'd go off to a gig. And she said, well, I wasn't sure if you'd like, ribs. So I've also done a chicken.
Wow.
Yeah. And then you'd come home at night, and there'd be a note on the fridge saying, oh, there's a pie in the fridge or something. So you'd go in there, and there'd be an apple pie. And then she'd say, well, I wasn't sure if you would like apple pie, so there's also a pumpkin pie and a raspberry pie.
Oh, wow.
Oh, just
can we go to Baba's house right now?
Well, yeah.
She's probably not there anymore.
Gone to Jeff's. What a dear woman.
Wow.
Suddenly, you know, I put on some weight, and that was a good weight because I needed that. The weight I have now is I could probably do with a little less. So.
Well,
it's okay. It's just in the wrong place, you know. When I was doing my Bachelor of Music, I took singing lessons, because it was a chorus, and I thought, oh, this will be an easy A because I can sing. Well, two things happened. One was he taped me, and I heard myself singing. And I've told this story before, but I was so upset. I thought, I will never sing again.
Really?
I thought I sounded so terrible. Hmm. And I walked off down the mall to the car.
Oh, wow.
Where I was going, I was almost in tears. And then about, you know, 20 minutes into to self-pity, I thought, well, you know what? I love singing, so I don't care if I sound horrible. I'm going to sing anyway. And anyway, yes. So anybody out there, don't ever listen to yourself.
That's true, yeah.
In the early stages, you know. Well, and I used to teach my choir kids. I said, well, and mind you, this is not good advice now, but I was saying, you know, think about, you know, you say, oh, I'm not that a very good singer. Well, there are people like Bob Dylan and Neil Young who aren't exactly Pavarotti.
Right.
But they've had really good careers, and they've written songs that appeal to people and find resonance. So what the heck? And I used to suggest to my kids, you know, if you've got, you know, a particular unique sounding voice, go for it, because uniqueness is what'll get you noticed. Now, I sort of, in today's market, that's not really good advice, because it seems like so many people, you know, especially everybody's auto-tuned.
Well, that's true.
And so it's like they all, everything's sort of homogenized. Although if you check around, you know, it sounds like an old guy. That rap is crap, you know. And I just, you know, the other day I was watching a kid. We watch the late shows because we're up late. Mm-hmm. And there was a kid called Jacob Collier.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Holy mackerel! It looked like he was really doing it. He played everything and sang everything in this video, and he was just omnicompetent. It's remarkable talent. So I'd like to see that kid. I think he's out of England. I'd like to see him be huge because, man, oh, man.
I've been hearing that name a bit lately, so he's probably on his way.
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah.
So what years were you with Trooper then?
75 to 79.
So four years.
You were asking me how I got a long time ago when the earth was green. You've ever seen. Sorry. That was
an Irish Rovers reference right there.
Green alligators, long neck geese.
Yes. My first concert was the Irish Rovers.
As there you go.
In northern Manitoba, I think.
Whoa. Well, see, that's the thing. You know, somebody said, oh, what are your influences? And I said, well, every song I've ever heard.
Yes, of course.
You know? But I started to say, well, who's had the most effect on me? Well, you know, guys like Steve Winwood. I just loved his stuff. Absolutely. Well, and the best rock and roll song ever, Give Me Some Lovin'.
Oh, the Spencer Davis Group.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
That's a very young Steve Winwood, right?
Like
15 or something crazy like that.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, so to me, that's the quintessential, you know, rock song of all time. Just the energy and
totally. And the organ.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. When did you get introduced to the Hammond and all that kind of stuff? When does that kind of come into play?
I think in 3 or 4 years, I got tired of the box continental, and you had to have a. So I started out with a Hammond A because it was cheaper.
Okay.
Didn't have percussion, and then I made the mistake of this. This is too heavy. I'm going to try cutting it down, and I'll make it into two sections. And that was good idea, but I didn't have the talent electronically to do it. So eventually, I got a B3 and hauled that around for years and years.
No, I can only imagine.
And you know what? I'll tell you though, I've still got it in the studio, and the one that was used on Raise a Little Hell. Oh, and I'll tell you a Hammond story. when we recorded Raise a Little Hell, I played the organ part. Oh no, not Raise a Little Hell. Sorry, Pretty Lady.
Okay.
Right.
Great.
So when I recorded that, I did one take on it, and Randy, back when it was producing, said, well, that sounds great. And I said, well, do you want to do one more just in case? And he said, yeah, okay, we can do another take. And I said, wait a second, there's something wrong in here. I had cranked the preamp on it so much that I had actually welded the speaker cone. Basically, the crap's on fire, so we couldn't do a second take because I had basically almost set fire to the whole Leslie. So that sound is partly because I was in the process of blowing up the Leslie.
That's amazing.
What I have now in the studio, which is really cool, we're boring everybody except the people who are into B3 Leslie speakers, but we don't care.
Exactly.
It's important to get it out there.
Yeah, exactly.
When the Leslie 145 or 147 has the horn, which goes, when you put it on tremolo, which is the fast speed, there's a baffle that spins around in the bottom, and it sounds awful. It goes, and it's not a nice thing. So what I do is I have my standard Leslie 145, which I mic the horn, and then I can adjust the speed on that fast or slow. And then I have an old solid state thing, and I don't even know what it's called, but it looks like an old stereo speaker system with where you'd have the turntable and all that stuff in there, and it's solid state, and I never take that off. I have it so I can have it on, turn it right off, or have it on chorale, but I never crank the tremolo up on that, and I mic that for the bottom end.
Right,
And it's really cool. And it, that organ went out on, the last time it toured was in the BB King band.
Wow.
They rented it. I knew the guy that was bringing them into Vancouver. And he said, oh, they need a B3. Could they rent yours? Okay. And I forget. They paid me a little bit, and I got tickets to the show.
There you go. That's kind of one of the things we talk about. Oh, hang on here. Did Frank finish his music degree or go off with the band?
I got my Bachelor of Music.
How you were able to teach later on in life, right?
Well, thank heavens I did, yeah, because when I decided, what happened is things started to fall apart after Body Electric, and I was pretty discouraged with trying to make a living as a musician, and they had a 1 year postgraduate program to become a teacher, and that was the last time it was offered, and so I thought, got to do it. So I went back and did that teaching certification year, and if I hadn't had the Bachelor of Music, I have one of my students who quit school just after grade 10. He says, oh, Mr. Ludwig, I'm going to go on tour with the band. I said, well, you know, good luck. But I said, if you can somehow, while you're doing that, finish off your courses just to get through your grade 12, as you never know, you know.
Right, right. Yeah. Where were you when I was doing this? My fallback position is sleeping on your couch when this is all over. Hopefully you'll take me in.
Yeah, we got a couple. If you don't mind sharing it with four cats, you
know. That's fine. No. I'm doing that now.
I'm the cat person.
Did your students
see all that fresh meat? What?
Yeah, yeah. I'm just wondering if your students knew your pedigree. You know, who was teaching them, and you know what you'd done, and that they had heard you sing on the radio probably inadvertently many times. Did that come up, or did?
Oh well, the word spread pretty quickly. But I'll tell you what, I'm not a nice person. But when I started teaching, my first school in Vancouver was David Thompson Secondary, and you know, they probably weren't aware at that time so much. But what happened is an article came out in the Vancouver Sun or Province on me. I forget.
Oh, wow.
Because even though I was teaching, it's a funny thing. The world thinks that you just quit music and disappeared. But what I did is I would teach during the day, and then I would go off and I would do, you know, jingle singing and I eventually started working out of a studio where we were doing ads, you know, commercials, and we were doing, you know, music for films and little mini documentaries and things, and political parties and so I was always doing music, sort of professional music on the side, but I had, you know, a day gig.
Sure. Yeah.
But anyway, so this article came out in the paper, and then the next day in school, the kids came out, Frank, such and such, and I just ignored them, and then all of a sudden they went, Mr. Ludwig, I said, oh yes. Did you have a question? And very quickly, I was basically setting a boundary. I'm not your friend.
Yeah.
Right. Not, yeah.
You know, I'm your teacher, and sure, I'm Mr. L or Mr. Ludwig. Sure. And it was pretty funny because, you know, and I said, you can call me Frank when you graduate.
Sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was the deal. And it was funny because the students that I work, you know, closest with, what, you know, I run into them now and then, and it's like, they'd rather call me Mr. L.
That's so all right. Cool, yeah.
I really like that, you know?
Yeah.
That's so cool. You know, one thing that we always talk about on this show when it comes to keyboards is, because these days you can get all those sounds in one little keyboard. Back then when you were touring, what all did you have on stage? Because, you know, like back in the day, it was like this guy doing all this kind of like a Keith Emerson, Rick Wakeman kind of world.
Well, and it was the big challenge was, well, I went through it. I was Self-Portrait was the band with the Vox Super Continental.
Right.
By the time I got into a band called Crosstown Bus, I had the B3 and I had a clavinet on top of that. Which was supposed to be the piano.
Sure,
you know,
okay.
You know, that was kind of it. And then later on, I got a thing, and I I wish I knew what it was, but it was the first electrified upright piano, and it would sit on top of the B3. The keyboard would go on top of the keyboard. And it was very cool because it had real strings, but it had sort of plastic components, so they tended to break a little bit. But that was the best sound that anybody had. Yeah. And I actually had that when I first went into Trooper.
Crazy.
And it was better than what anybody else really had out there on the road. And what was kind of cool, in Crosstone Bus, we did a suite called the, it was inspired by the Collector's, you know, What Love Suite. We did a 20-minute song called Welcome to North America. And if I can remember it here.
Wow.
Yeah, it was kind of neat, right? And in the middle, our lead singer was quite a good conga player. We did a whole thing where we just into a big percussion breakdown. But in that thing, what had happened is there was a little fiber board or whatever front on this piano. And we were opening for Crowbar. Okay. Oh, what a feeling.
Oh, yeah.
Three times. Five times. One night, just for, as a joke, we did 100 times. Like, I feel all right.
Instead of trying to count 100 times.
Yeah. I think we did 101. You know,
oh, my God.
Yeah. And a bunch of Dalmatians came running in.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Full anyway, circle.
So we were playing Kamloops. Crowbar flew into Kamloops because they were big shots, and they were using our gear. And Kelly J, I think, was the keyboard player for Crowbar, is playing. And they start describing, but apparently they almost crash landed. It was really scary. They dropped.
Oh boy!
Down. And so he's describing this frightening event that they just had, and he's going, "They came down." And it came down, and he's doing this on my poor light little keyboard. Right, you know, and I'm sitting in the audience going, no, please don't. Anyway, somehow in all of this, the front little bit of wood got broken, and I replaced it, or I left it open, and I went in the middle of the Welcome to North America. I would hold the pedal, I would go around the front, and I would actually play the strings like a harp. Ding, 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 ding.
Cool.
It was really cool, right? Yeah. It's kind of like, what do you call that? There was a thing where people would take grand pianos and they would put tacks on them and things. It was not music, like, concrete. I used to, if I had really paid attention while I finished that Bachelor of Music, I would.
like the old saloon style kind of.
Special name for it. Not attack piano.
Attack piano, yep, exactly.
Attack piano, yeah.
Is it? Oh, maybe. Okay.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, that might have been it.
Yeah, right.
I thought you didn't know anything about keyboards, you guys.
We do. I love keyboards. Ones.
Yeah.
Right. Did you ever have a message? Someone said Brian Allen says, "Hey, Tuke's looking for a keyboard player, Frank." Somebody just commented. We are.
There you go. We're taking you out of retirement. There you go.
Yeah. Well, you know, you don't retire. I mean, I do. I'm doing music about 8 hours a day at least now.
That's amazing. Good for you.
Well, that's a great thing about it. It's like I look at some of my friends who are, you know, a lot more cool in school because they were the jocks, and of course, you know, once they get past about 30, you know, they've let themselves go or something has happened, and or they just can't do it, you know. And the great thing about music is you can redo it,
right? Of course. Yeah,
so yeah,
it's, yeah,
lifelong learning, we call it in the school.
That's training. True. Yeah,
exactly.
Very cool. And I conduct a Vancouver concert, well, I haven't since COVID, but I conduct the Vancouver Concert Band, and this past year we had over 70 members.
Wow,
and they're the nicest people. And then we go out and we play old folks' homes and stuff. And
that's
we do a lot of big band stuff and a mixture of things. And it's just, you know, just some great stuff. Leroy Anderson, I know that, you know, names like that mean anything, but what's the other, you know, Begin the Begin, you know, just really cool rhythm stuff. And and big, yeah, big band stuff. So really fun to do, to conduct, and as I say, just nice people. And it's really neat in this last year and a half of it before COVID. We had a two, I guess it would be 2 years ago when, and my grandson and granddaughter were, I guess they were about 14. And we were about to do a concert, and my really fine tuba player said, "Oh, I got to travel on business. I'll be out of the country. And I don't think I can make it back in time." So I asked my grandson to sit in, and he came to one rehearsal, and then he sat in on the concert. And I have a lead trumpet player who's got a Bachelor of Music and really not only a fine musician, he was also the president of the Canadian Chefs Association because he ran a restaurant. You know, anyway, he came up afterwards. He said, "Jesus, that kid's blowing the whole trumpet section out of the water." Anyway, so he had so much fun. And my granddaughter plays bass clarinet, and my grandson on tuba. And they had so much fun in our band because, well, they were both in the Richmond Honor Band, but the stuff we play is a lot more advanced, a lot more fun, and playing with, you know, really good musicians. And they said, could we join the band next year? So that in grade, I guess it was grade 10 and the start of grade 11, they were doing their school band, they were doing the honor band, Richmond Honor Band, and they were in what they call Grandpa's Band. And the cool thing about that was that because they needed a ride from Richmond into Vancouver every Wednesday night, my son said, "Well, I might as well bring my flute and play." And so I get my son, grandson, and granddaughter in Grandpa's Band. And that's so cool. And the great thing, of course, my son is, you know, he has a master's in composition. And
wow.
He's a flautist. he's so good. They call him a flautist. and you know, I would, in a community band, you get all sorts of different levels, and I'd have about 8 flutes on any given year, and all 8 of them combined would make the sound of one really good flautist. And so when my son came in and sat in on flute, it was like, oh, I can hear the flute section. And the first time he played, the rest of the flutes just kind of went, that's what a flute sounds like, right?
Oh, yeah.
And of course he started, you know, working with them, and it's really, all of a sudden I could hear, you know, if there was 2 flute parts, I could hear both parts, so having him there, what a great resource. And it's just,
wow, what a musical family. That's really impressive.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Pretty fun. Yeah, so COVID kind of put the kibosh, so we're hoping to get back in September, and they'll be back in Grandpa's Band, I hope.
Put the kibosh on a great many things, unfortunately.
Yeah, sure. Sure.
We're not qualified. I'm not qualified to be in Grandpa's Band. I really don't. I don't think I would. I think you'd probably give me the elbow, as they say.
So no, we gotta. Sorry,
no.
Go ahead.
No, we don't do that. We've had a couple of people who actually have almost started playing, but they were really motivated to work, and I just said, okay, play the whole notes.
There you go.
When you're ready to play half notes, move on up. And a couple of those people, by the time, you know, second or third year, and sometimes they'll take a private lesson and stuff, you know, lessons and stuff, are playing really, you know, at least about a grade 12 high school band level, you know, back in the day when high school bands.
Yeah, right.
I was in that band. I loved it. I was in junior high concert and jazz band and high school. And I went on band trips every year. We used to go to those, you know, contests where the band competes, you know, in Toronto against them, and you get adjudicated and all that stuff. I loved all that. That's some of my best music, you know, vocabulary I got.
What were you playing in those days, Fitz?
Well, I was percussion, but it covered, remember, percussion includes xylophone and glockenspiel, which are melody instruments, and timpani, you know, which had a lot of, you know, it wasn't just snare drum. And I never wanted to play just snare drum, bass drum.
Yeah, just a cymbal guy. I could do that.
Yeah.
Oh, I got to tell you about cymbals in high school band. Dave Sinclair, the late Dave Sinclair, was a wonderful guitar player. Played with Katie Lang at one. Mm-hmm. And after that, who did the big women's tour? Sarah McLachlan.
Right.
Sarah McLachlan played with Body Electric, obviously, with me, and I'd known for years. And he told me that in high school band, he played the crash cymbals. And he said what he would do, he'd be in the back row, and he learned to just gently do it so it would cause a cushion of air to go, and it would knock the music off the kid in front music stand. Flicking the music off everybody's stand.
That's great.
The other thing about Crash Cymbals too is, I don't know if you ever saw the Far Side cartoon where the guy's holding up one big crash cymbal. He's looking intently at the music. This time I will not screw up. And of course he's forgotten that the second crash cymbal
screw up. Tom eventually screwed up.
Frank, I have to admit, during high school, and because I grew up playing piano like yourself, I was always a melody instrument guy. And by the time high school band and whatnot, and I was, you know, teenager, a little bit cocky, but still a good student. But the teacher would go around with the little tuner, right? And everybody had to get in tune. So you go through the saxophones and the trumpets, and everybody's getting a little, you know, the reed instruments.
Are you suggesting saxophones can actually tune?
Well, I'm just saying, like, he's getting the whole band in, you know what I'm saying? And
I'm just insulting the saxophones.
Yeah. That's all I'm doing.
Sorry.
I used to kind of get mad if it wasn't quite okay. Well, they're kind of in tune. It used to drive me nuts because I guess I have perfect pitch, but I would get a little bit wound up with the teacher, like, that guy's still out of tune, and they'd be like, Fitz, out of the room. And a good teacher, Mr. Ross Shaver, who's an excellent band director. He used to give me a hard time because I would be a little bit of a shitster in the back there, the percussion guy telling him, hey, that guy's not in tune yet.
But, you know, well, that's funny. Because when I was like a little kid, my parents would have the piano tuned, and I'd be around the corner and say, it's flat.
Right. And my parents, did you have, like, was your piano the living room piano, like the all embodied, like everybody had a piano in their house, and piano lessons were and everything.
But I got to tell you, the one I still have it when my parents passed on, I kept that piano, and it's on Pender Island, and it's a Nordheimer, and it's the best sounding, just home upright. It's the one with quite a tall back on it, and ours is beautiful, dark, almost, I don't know if it's cherry wood, and I thought. And that's what I got to play growing up on it. And it was wonderful piano. And I thought, I played, Mason and Riesch and all these other pianos. And they just
were German brands,
dogs by comparison. And then one time our band was playing at a church hall it was just a rehearsal, but we had lost our space in the school because of an event. And we went into this church, and there was a piano there, and it was mahogany, really kind of unattractive. But I had played it, and it was like, this sounds as good as my growing up piano. And I
Nordheimer,
it was a Nordheimer.
Yeah. There you go.
So you knew.
I never heard of that one before.
We got a question for you from Rick Shermack. We all want to know, Frank, what's the story why you left Trooper when they were in their prime?
Well, it boils down to why bands break up generally.
Right.
When personalities. When you first form a band, it's the five musketeers. It's all for one, one for all. And when Trooper was fortunate enough, after I joined them, we went in the studio, and Two for the Show became a hit. And we were all just thrilled, the band's starting to happen. They had a little bit of airplay on the first album before I joined them with good old General Hand Grenade and Baby, Won't You Please Come Home. But Two for the Show really took off. And life was good. And then what happens, you get into the next album and you realize that you're all still making $75 a week, but the songwriter is now driving a brand new car.
Right.
And that's okay too. That's okay. But then what happens is you say, well, I've got a song here called Round, Round We Go, and you can't get the time of day in the band. And the only reason Round, Round We Go ever made it was actually Ray got in a small car accident. And Smitty phoned me up. He said, Ray's been hurt, and it's going to be, you know, a week or so before he can come back to rehearsal. Do you think we should rehearse? I said, well, we're supposed to go in the studio for Knock 'Em Dead or for Thick as Thieves. I guess we should maybe, you know, tighten some stuff up. So with the rest of us got together. We did it, rehearsed the stuff we needed to rehearse. And it, you know, at some point it was like, well, we've done everything we need to do. You know, we got a bit of time left here. What do you want to do? I said, well, I've got this song called Round, Round We Go. And I'm teaching it to the Randy Backman happened to drop by the rehearsal studio. I said, what's that song? I said, no, it's something Frank wrote. So that song made it onto the album. And there was another song that I had written. I think it was called Fine Mess. This is a fine mess you've gotten us into. And we also learned that, and that was in the running. And of course, you know, nowadays on a CD, you can have 17 songs. In those days, you could only have 10 songs. If you had more than 10 3.5-minute songs, the grooves on the vinyl get too close together, and the fidelity disappears on you. Mm-hmm. So you really only want to have about 10 songs. So suddenly, knowing that there's money involved, there can be infighting. Mm-hmm. And it's really foolish, because if you get a hit, the band does better on tour. And so it comes down to kind of greed and on some people's parts. And I suppose, well, yeah, mostly that. So we started getting into a thing where it's like, so we get into the sessions with Round, Round We Go. And I had just finished singing it. And Smitty comes out to me. We're at Mushroom. And he says, Frank, do you think, and I'll give you an idea, a moment that it takes. Donnie and Tommy had written this song, and Smitty and I had helped them craft it quite a bit. And they went to Ray and said, you know, would you sing our song? And he said, oh, well, it'll be so much better if you sing it, because you're closer to the song, and it'll, you know, it'll have more resonance sort of thing if you sing it, which sounds logical. But what it really means is, I know that your song won't get the time of day if I don't sing it. So they came to me and said, Frank, would you sing Moment That It Takes? And I'm like, sure. So anyway, I just finished Round We Go in Mushroom. And Smitty comes out, he says, so Randy wants to know, do you think Moment That It Takes should be on the album? I said, well, yeah, of course. It'd be really nice for Donnie and Tommy to have a song on the album. And so Smitty walks back into the control room, and I hear him say to Randy, yeah, Frank says, Moment That It Takes is on, Fine Mass is off.
Okay.
And it was like, I didn't think this was an either or. Mm-hmm. It was going to cost me a song on the album, and how come it was a choice between those two, right?
That's because you were singing both songs? Is that?
I was singing, no, it's just a matter of, you know, if there's 10 songs and you're used to getting 9 of them, and suddenly you can only get 7. So it started to get, so after that was, and then it would be on tour. I can remember being in the Maritimes and Ray was it? We were in the motel room in somewhere, I don't know if it was Halifax or something like that. And Ray gets is doing a radio interview. And what happened is when Ray's Little Hell and Round, they weren't sure which one to do. So what happened is they both were put out as singles. In fact, some of them were done with double-sided, Round, and Ray's Little Hell. And the heavy rock stations would play Ray's Little Hell, and the not-quite-so-heavy stations would play Round, We Go, and that's a good thing, right? Yeah. But anyway, so at some point in the conversation, I think, I don't know if you had a speakerphone or we could just hear, but the radio guy says, oh, your song just broke the top 10. And Ray said, oh, which song? And he said, oh, Round, Round We Go. And Ray went, ah, shit. And I just looked at him for a minute, and I said, and I waited till the call ended. I said, you know, Ray, when Two for the Show became top 10, we were all thrilled. Mm-hmm. We didn't stop to think, oh, Ray's going to make all the money. We thought, this is great for the band, and great. I said, I'm really saddened that you don't have the same attitude towards us having a hit with Round, Round We Go. So by the time we get into Flying Colors, it was war. And I went to Ray and Brian, who were basically co-writing, you know, everything together. I said, look, why don't we just split everything five ways? And they, oh, Tommy and Donnie don't do anything. I said, well, you know, when we do Raise a Little Hell, and Tommy goes, brah, boom, boom, brah, boom, boom, Raise a Little Hell. I said, that gets all the heavy rockers going, hey, it's not just a ballad band, too, for the show, Pretty Lady. These guys rock, you know. I said, that's just as important in the song and us having a career. So, you know, they're not going to do that. So I finally said, okay. So I went to Tommy and Donnie. I said, look, I've got some new songs here that I've written. We're going to split it three ways. And of course, what happened then when it comes to choosing the songs, at that point, suddenly Ray and Brian are two votes and Tommy, Donnie and Frank are three votes. So what Ray and Brian did is they went to Sam Feldman, manager extraordinaire. he was a good doorman at the Daisy.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the reason I say this so vehemently is if he had been a good manager, he would have got his wet and got in there and said, look, guys, we got to come to some sort of solution here. You know, let's keep it together. We got a good thing going. Let's resolve this. But he said, no, he gets a vote with Ray and Brian. So now it's three against three. So at that point, I said, look, let's just record all the songs, send them all to MCA. They can pick the 10 they like. Mm-hmm. There it is. We don't have to fight over this. Well, they knew damn well that wasn't a good idea for them because I was writing some decent songs.
Right.
So what they did is they said, well, we think our road manager should also have a vote. That's Randy Berswick. Hmm. So now it's four for them against three of us. And what I found out after I left was that they cut Randy Berswick in for 5% of the action.
Interesting.
Oh, wow.
Okay. It's like a mob deal or something.
So his vote
turned into money.
Okay, and of course now you guys got a first here because I have kind of avoided talking about this because it is water under the bridge. Mm-hmm. But you see the whole thing, and it stemmed even earlier. Like for instance, in Pretty Lady, the song they had, and I actually have a demo somewhere, which out of courtesy to them, I've never released to anybody, with the original song that they wrote when they were in Winter's Green. Pretty Lady, da da da. Da 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 da, da da da, and the thing I hate the most is how, which to me is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. So I wrote this. Etc. So I wrote that, right?
Wow.
Pretty Lady. They call that arranging.
Oh.
They don't call that songwriting.
It's like, I don't know.
There's a whole whack of chords there that aren't the three chords you wrote.
Yeah.
And now that brings me back as everything.
And it's a signature, isn't it? It's the signature of the start of that song.
It was the difference between the first album and an album that has.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I guess I arranged two for the show. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay. What did I? You had asked Corey. You asked a question a long time ago, and I never really answered it. I almost got to it. Oh well, and I flashed on it, and now it's gone again.
No problem. We are all mesmerized by the
UFOs that are floating out there, you know.
Too many UFOs, too distracting.
You were bringing up something that you really don't touch on. Is that you finished that thought?
You know, it was War of the Worlds for flying colors. Mm-hmm. So as Ray has correctly pointed out, Side A is basically, you know, Ray and Brian, which he considers Trooper, and Side B was Frank Ludwig's offerings with Tommy and Donnie. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and here's the other thing, you know, that is kind of galling. You guys are letting me hear. I get this all.
It's really the Diane Walters show, Barbara Walters show.
Diane Sawyer.
Diane Sawyer, Barbara Walters. Yeah.
All those people. You know, for instance, Ray and Brian, you know, brought in a country song, and it just wasn't working. And we tried it. The aliens are coming. and we tried about 12 different ways. And finally, I said, look, Tommy, give me a kind of a white man's reggae beat. And so I went.
Okay.
Oh, for a good time, right? And that became Here for a Good Time. And so it's like we, 100%, we, meaning everybody in the band, worked to make the best songs we could out of Pretty Lady, out of Two for the Show, out of everything. But the same wasn't reciprocated. So the solution for that was when I brought in the songs for Flying Colors, they were ready to go. Now, I have to say, in fairness, Smitty was pretty open to contributing, you know. And the other thing, you know, I understand, you know, for Ray, I mean, there was one point when we're going to do a TV show, and round we go ahead, and we're going to get to do two songs, and so we're going to do Ray's Little Hell on one, as one song, and two, and round we go as the other. And Ray said, well, what am I going to do if we do round we go? And normally I would have said, well, the same thing, Paige, or who was the lead singer for Toto? I said, when Steve Lukather sings all the hits, what does he do? You know, so it's like, you know, I just said, oh, play tambourine, you know. We didn't do that song. We did do it on one TV show because I have it somewhere on my website. So I must have got to do it somewhere. But so that was the kind of deal. And I'll tell you, and very few people know this story. I mean, this will be a first, guys. Huh. And what was the guy's name that were? I hope he's still with us because I'm a long-winded old man. but it might as well be out there. A couple of things. When Flying Colors came out, I didn't realize, but they were going to release Quiet Desperation as the first single. Hmm. And that, I think, is actually one of my best songs that I've ever written. And the reason I like it is because it implies a conversation. And it really is it's a scene, right? Because, you know, started the day at 5:30 this morning, still half asleep, reached toward her pillow, no one there. She left before daybreak, a brief kiss on the cheek, introducing heartache. A flip of her hair as she walked out the door, I won't see her anymore. But the most telling thing about this psychologically is the second verse. She wants to be the world's finest actress. Or did she say a famous ballerina? Either way, I'm still left here. And what that says is he's so out of touch with her needs and what she needs to feel fulfilled, that he doesn't even know if it's she wanted to be an actress or if she wanted to be a draftsperson or whatever. So he's just a loser, right? Mm-hmm. So I lyrically, that song. Anyway, so that was going to be the first single. So, of course, that didn't happen because I had quit. right at that time. And but the other thing that happened, which I didn't realize, I went and worked. Randy Bachman had, you know, first of all, Randy got dumped. Ray decided we didn't want Randy as a producer anymore, which is the most ungrateful thing you can imagine. If it wasn't for Randy Bachman, Trooper would have never got out of the garage. You know, that's reality. Mm-hmm. And sure. And so it's like, and to turn around and say, well, you're not going to be our producer anymore. And we got a guy who had been an engineer in LA who had never produced anything before, and it was a disaster. But we managed to get the album out anyway. But anyway, what I didn't realize is so I go to work. Randy had said, you know, if you're ever so unhappy you can't stand Trooper anymore, I'd love to have you come and work with me. And when he said that, I said, how about now? Good. I'll do that now. Well, and it was kind of like, okay, Trooper's kind of at the top of the heap in Canada, but so what? You know, we weren't going to break the U.S. So I went to work with Randy. And I'll tell you, and part of this also, you know, this is sounding like a really whiny sort of thing on my part, but with Hot Shots, MCA, you know, and I've seen online people say, yeah, MCA really screwed the whatever on Trooper. No, they didn't. Here's what happened. MCA decided, US, that with Hot Shots, this could be like our first single, our first album. We have never broken the U.S. Let's treat Hot Shots as our first album, Trooper's first album in the U.S., and which is wonderful. And they decided they wanted the first single to be Round, Round We Go. I didn't know this, because what they had conveyed this to our brilliant manager, Sam Feldman. And, of course, Ray and Smitty had screaming hysterics, and so they went, Sam! So Sam told MCA US, no, you can't release Round We Go as the first single. It's got to be, you know, one of the others. And MCA US basically said, if you don't think we know our market, and you don't think have enough respect for us to think we know what we're doing, we've had enough. And they subsequently dropped Trooper.
Wow.
What I didn't realize, because Graham Waymark was Randy Bachman's manager by this time, he had been their BTO as financial kind of guru, and became Randy was the manager. They wanted me to work with Randy so badly that they didn't tell me at the time that MCA was going to drop Trooper that they were going to sign me to a solo deal.
Oh wow.
And I eventually found out, Randy, I guess he must have had a little guilt conscience or something, would say, oh, hey, Frank, that song you've got, such and such, you know, it doesn't really fit with Iron Horse, but, you know, we should do a solo album for you. I'd be like, oh, okay. Randy, you're such a great guy, Randy. You know? Anyway, so, and then by the time we put together that and Graham went to whoever they didn't want me as a solo deal or whatever. So, you know, such as
like. But you did go on to have a solo sort of project, and that kind of, you were fronting Body Electric after that. Is that when that happened?
Well, I worked with Randy for, I forget how long, maybe a couple, a year and a half or 2 years, maybe. I don't really know. And I have to say, it was just a wonderful collaboration. You know, we both came up loving the Beatles. We both came up loving Roy Orbison. And there's a song on the Iron Horse album, if I can. But I'm hurting inside, and my eyes can see from tears, can't see from tears that I cried. And I keep going, it's not over, life is just bad. Anyway, I would sing at chest, but yeah. then I would distort my mic and stuff. But and also, working too hard. I might break a sweat. I don't want to do that. Anyway, so that was a, you know, based on a Roy Orbison thing. And we had another song that never got released, called In Anger, which I would tend to do the lyrics. It's funny, Randy and I would get together. He says, come on, let's spend a day writing some songs. So I go down to his place, and one day we did it at the house in Linden, not the mansion, just outside of Linden. And we would do what he called, we would write three or four songs. Well, what that meant was we would come up with a chorus hook, and we would come up with maybe a verse of lyrics that led into, you know, that told the story, set up the chorus hook, and that would be writing a song. And of course, he'd have just some wonderful guitar thing involved, and then I'd get a call, you know, 3 weeks later on a Sunday, to Frank. Yeah, remember that song In Anger? Yeah. Said, well, let's record that tomorrow. I got Chris Layton and Ron Foose coming up from Seattle tomorrow. And be like, okay. And it'd be like, geez, there's only one verse. And I'd be up to like 3 a.m. writing two more verses for it. But anyway, but yeah, there was a song called In Anger, which was very much, well, we did two sets of lyrics on that and recorded two versions of it. But the one was very sort of Roy Orbison, overly dramatic. I run to the river where she, there's only a handkerchief by the shore. So the inference is that she committed suicide. And the chorus is me. We talk too fast in anger. Things we didn't mean in anger. Now I can't go, now we can't go back on the things we said. In the heat of the moment I fled in anger. It's a song I'm actually thinking of redoing.
You should totally do that.
Yeah. And then the verse. Listen, please, I'm begging you. Don't you see that I'm sorry too? What makes you think that people keep on punishing me?
That's great.
Yeah, it really rocks, and it's amazing. Although I've been thinking of doing it maybe a little more low key, but we wrote some great songs together.
Nice.
And then what happened is Randy was going through a lot. He was in the process of getting a divorce from his first wife, which really played heavily into sort of the vibe of everything is gray.
Mm-hmm.
And we had started to get ready to go and tour to support that album. And we're starting to get a little play on What's Your Hurry, Darling? You know that, I don't know if you know that song.
No.
Every night when I'm away from your side, all the tears that I cried, when I think how hard we tried, what's your hurry, darling? Take it easy, it's gonna be all right. What's your hurry, darling? Take it easy, it's gonna be all right. It was written by Carl Wilson and Randy.
From the Beach Boys, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. By the way, Carl Wilson, one night, and this was before, you know, the day of phones. I wish I'd had a recorder or something. We went down below the studio part in Randy, the barn studio, and we're downstairs. There's a couch there, and we're just sitting around in the evening, and Carl Wilson brings out a guitar, and he starts singing songs that never made it onto Beach Boys albums that he'd written.
Wow. And
just gorgeous melodies and really nice lyrics. And it's like, oh, these are awesome. And it's like, oh, I just wish I'd had a tape recorder going, you know, or a video camera.
Totally, yeah.
He's gone now, right? So,
of course, yeah.
Anyway, so after a couple of years with, you know, whatever the time was with Randy, which was, you know, I mean, what a great guitar player, you know. And this is what I used to, you know, so many guitar players. Well, I'll give you an example. On the Flying Colors album, Howard Steele, because he wanted to ingratiate himself with everybody in LA and everywhere, without talking to us, replaced one of Smitty's solos. And one of the things, and I think I'd been involved in that process with Randy right from the Two for the Show. Randy and I, you know, maneuvered Smitty to do a melodic solo. Because to me, a solo that actually fits into the mood of the thing, and Randy's the best at that. If you think about it, I call them signature solos.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah.
I mean, I bet you we could all go bum bum bum, dum bum bum.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, you know, American Woman.
One of the all-time greats, yeah.
Yeah, just and because it's singable, it's melodic, and it breathes. One of the things I used to teach my violinist is like, in string class, it's like, you have the ability to play without breathing. But I said, then your playing doesn't breathe. So, right. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah, that's good.
And I do the same thing with my band with saxophones. Pick on them again. You know, I'll say, how would you sing that line? And I give an example. I'll say, okay, here's your sax line.
No space to breathe.
Yeah, so put 2 beats of rest.
Yeah.
I used to tell my beginning bands, which somebody, people would ask me, you know, you're such a good musician. How can you stand doing beginner band? I said, it's such a wonderful thing because these kids come in and they can't play a single note on day one. And then by the end of the year, they can play at least 12 notes in time and in tune. And, it's miraculous. And then you hear the same kid in 4 years later in grade 11, 12 senior band. And they're playing real music and really good and musically, and it's just wonderful. So I love, you know, it's like seeing the birth of the blues.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
And anyway, but yeah, so the saxophone, I'd say, you know, breathe and put, you know, in your solo. So anyway, so back to Howard Steele gets Steve Lukather to replace one of Smitty's solos, and it was a, you know, typical Smitty solo that had, you know, a melodic.
Where did you guys record that record?
The Flying Colors, in Edmonton at forget the name. It was what was his name? The guy that owned it, quite a well known from the early days. I almost flashed on it. Yeah, you'll have to look it up. Anyway,
one of the Carroll brothers or something?
No. It's a much older, an older guy.
Okay.
It's just under Holger Peterson, maybe.
Okay.
Probably a name you don't know even. But I think Holger Peterson, I'm guessing. Anyway, so he, between the time we've recorded it in Edmonton, and the time we go to mix it in Criterion in Fort Lauderdale, he replaced Smitty. So he had Steve Lukather play on it. Now, wow. Steve Lukather is a god, you know, guitar god. But he just wanked, you know, and it was like, you know, what technique? And it was awesome in the wankdom sense, but it had nothing to do with the song. And he probably just came in there, sure, I'll play on it. And then the part that really galled me was on Quiet Desperation. He got the keyboard player from Toto to replace my strings. And I had a thing, and you were talking, Corey, about, what equipment I used when I got the B3 came about. I also used, in the Trooper days, I had a thing called an Elka string synthesizer, which was a synthetic string unit.
Sure, yeah.
When it first came out, it was pretty cool, pretty close. It wasn't digital, of course. But what I had a guy, a technician, go in there and create a pitch thing. So what I would do in Quiet Desperation, instead of playing chords, I don't know if I got a string. Yeah, that's organ sound, but... Instead of playing chords, I would dial up the string sound and I would play. Mm-hmm. on one track, and I would adjust the vibrato, and then I would do the, in fact, not that much. Right? And I would, so each four, in a four or a three-part chord, each one would have its vibrato coming and going at different times. And what we ended up on Quiet Desperation, when we finished recording it in Edmonton, it sounded pretty damn close to a real string section.
Mm, wow.
And so what Howard did is he killed that and put in just a synth pad.
Okay.
Maybe that's more 80s. I don't know. It was only 79 at the time. But but it was like, okay. And then he had blown through the budget so badly that when it came time to go do the mix in Criterion, and there wasn't enough money left for the whole band to go. So essentially, surprisingly, Ray said, well, Smitty, why don't you go? And it was probably because he knew I would probably kill him. If we went together, I would end up having to kill him.
Makes for a great story, though.
That's a great soundbite for.
there's a Faulkner line where the dad brutalizes the kid, horribly. But he would say, "But he did it without heat," and it was kind of like, just because he had it coming in, because it wasn't out of anger or anything. It was just righteous to do so. So if I had killed him, it would have been righteously
without heat.
So Ray said, Smitty, you go from our camp, and Frank and Tommy and Donnie said, okay, Frank, you go from our camp. So Smitty and I go, and it's really funny because we're on the plane trip from we go to LA first, pick up Howard, and we're flying off to Fort Lauderdale. And Howard is like, Frank, if you would just do a little, you'd learn to relax a little, if you do a little cocaine, you just wouldn't be so uptight. I said, Howard, you mean I'd be more amenable to theory, more amenable to things like what happened? We had one song where Howard, no, don't panic. We're all sitting there with our arms out, and we've got segments of a song in 2-inch tape hanging from our arms, the whole band. There's all these teams, and we're kind of going, because he's decided he's going to change the arrangement. Okay, that's fine. So anyways, so he puts it all back in there, and he says, see, I told you it would work out okay. And he plays it through, and yeah, see, isn't that great? And all the band, oh, yeah, yeah. And I said, could you play the second line of the second verse there? And, yeah, what's the problem? I said, well, there's about a half a beat missing. It sounds like there's like a half a kick drum. No. Would you humor me and play it, right? So they play it. And sure enough, there's just the he had dropped. And anyway, so we had to take it all back, and we got our arms.
Oh my god!
And he finally founds a piece of tape, and I don't know, 30 IPS or 60. I don't know how fast it goes. 60, I guess. About this much tape he had clipped off.
Oh my god!
But they were, nobody else in the band, nor he could hear that, but I could.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, yeah, maybe if I'd done a bit of coke, then I would have missed that,
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or not cared or whatever. Yeah.
And to me, mellowing, the thought of me, I never have done coke because I'm such a hyper guy. Something like that, I would have just, I don't know.
Exploded. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tried flying. Or
amazing
something.
Stories, Frank. We really appreciate.
We're gonna do a second part of this.
Yeah, totally. Like, we haven't even covered half of what you've done, and
I never even got to. Didn't even get to Fort Lauderdale, where the truth comes out.
Okay, let's hear that.
Oh,
all right. You baited us.
I'm going to finish that story if you don't mind.
Please.
So we get there, and they're setting up for the mix, and the first day, and all of a sudden. Smitty and I come in, and we see all these guys playing on our songs. Said, Howard, what's going on? He said, the Bee Gees are in here in Studio B or something, and I thought it'd be really great if their backup band are all here, because they were recording Andy Gibb, and he had a hit with it, and then he
committed suicide. Right.
The younger brother of the Bee Gees they were recording his thing, and he was getting these guys to play on our album, and so he was replacing stuff that Trooper did members with all these different things. And I found out he was paying them triple scale. And we've already blown through the whole budget to a point where I had to put our hotel bill on my personal visa so we could pay the bill to fly home, right?
Oh, and, my God.
And so finally, Smitty and I, in total agreement, Howard, knock it off. No, the album's done. We do the mix.
Right,
you know,
right.
You know, so oh, it's just...
Oy vey. Oh, wow. Of course, that triple scale that he's paying is coming out of your pocket.
Yeah.
One way
yeah.
or another.
Well, oh, yeah, absolutely. And, yeah. and we didn't have it. He'd already gone through the whole budget. At one point, there was a big... Oh, I'll save it for another time, if you like.
yeah. You're all your stories, though, it's not like the music industry has changed at all. It's just sort of like this chicanery carries on until the end of time with these.
Have you interviewed Mick Dellavincenza?
No. I got interviewed by him recently, but I thought he would be a great guest for the show as well.
A really good guy. And
that would be great.
He plays in Cease and Desist with Mark LaFrance.
That's
and
right.
he also
That's
played well. In Shama and, you know.
Well, the Shama trauma story would really support everything I've said about, you know, Sam Feldman and Randy Burge. All those names that I've mentioned as somewhat askance. Boy, you hear the story of Shama / trauma, and it's like, oh, there they go again. You know, because they had such potential.
Uh-huh.
Totally. Yeah, I know. It's such a trap. I mean, you know, it's that thing. This business is just it's a vicious game. It's a tough one. What are you gonna do?
Yeah.
You know.
We do it because we love it, and then.
But we do it because we love it. Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, you could. It's a little better now.
We stupid.
It's a little better now because there's no money to make in it as far as publishing anything goes. So
that's true, right?
It kind of helps with some of the fighting. Yeah.
That's true. That's a good point.
And you can get more songs on the CD. And when you're traveling, you know what scares me is when I hear about what people are making in the clubs these days. It's the same money as we made in the 70s,
right?
And the only thing is, instead of being five nights a week, it's for three nights a week. Like, that's any compensation. You can't live on. So I don't know how anybody survives.
No,
just, you know, I can't wait to get back on tours. Like, really, who makes money on that? And then very, very quickly, you know, we would make money in Halifax, and then to keep us busy during the week, we would play Truro and we would play Lunenburg, and and we could make it. We'd sell out, and we'd make $5,000 gross. And you know how much it cost us to keep our roadies and our trucks and everything on the road? $5,000. So we made nothing. But guess who got 15% of the gross?
Management.
And the manager.
Yeah. Always, yeah.
So we came home back from a tour with nothing, essentially. We paid our own salaries, kept everybody, you know, paid for the weeks. And the stay-at-home guy bought himself a brand new Mercedes, you know. So.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. Oh,
yeah. And that hasn't changed, I'm afraid.
No, that's the same story over and over and over.
Story. Yeah, exactly.
Well, we're ending on a really negative
note. Not at all. Yes, yeah, somehow we still love it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, guess why? It's because of the music.
Yeah, of course.
That's right.
Of course. And I think
so,
that's
Frank, you want to join our band? We all like each other. We actually get along, right?
Yeah. But
I can change that really quickly.
if you join our band, Frank.
Did I ever tell you the story for the fourth time? You know?
Yeah.
that old guy won't shut up, and that stupid story. Howard Steele. God. You gotta check him out.
If you join,
you're willing to share. Yeah, 90% of the proceeds go to me, and you guys get the other 10% through.
Wait a minute. Let me think. We'll get back to you on that.
Yeah, but see what I'm doing there.
Yes,
10% wouldn't divide by three, so it would create friction.
So I get the majority.
I'd be able to maneuver one of you out, and then I'd get 91%.
Uh-huh. There you go. That's the music business right there. There it
Fool
is.
Fool me once, shame on you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
If you join our band, you have to make sure that you come into the room every time for rehearsal and go, darling, darling. Every time you say something, you have to start with that.
Darling, darling.
Darling, darling, exactly.
I'll write the Dr. Who version. Dalek, Dalek.
There you go.
Oh, you know what? Oh, here we go again. We're going overtime. Do I get fined if I go overtime? Or do I get extra pay?
I get extra.
Yeah. There you go. Back to you. So I never finished. Oh, Jesus, terrible. So when we're on tour, nothing to do, and so we would change up the name. So when we're writing up our set list, we'd say, oh, where will we do Shoe for the Toe?
Two for the Show.
Round became the Hamburger Song. When are we going to do the Hamburger Song? Because it was Ground Round.
Oh, Ground Round.
Yeah. So when I wrote Back to You, the lyrics go ground round and round. I'm down in downtown nowhere. And this is, remember I was saying the rain in Spain falls mainly on the plane.
Right.
No trains, no planes. It's plain small change ain't car fare. Sitting on the highway, it's pouring rain. There isn't a dry way to go. That whole thing of a ground round and round, I'm down in downtown nowhere, was all that onomatopoeia, if that's the correct term for that.
I love thing it.
From the rain in Spain falls mainly on the plain.
Beautiful.
Amazing.
We've learned so much today.
Yes. Well,
me too. It's like I shouldn't talk so much.
Nah, baby, don't talk like that. But thanks so much. Story. We gotta get on with the day. But well, that was awesome. Thanks so much, Frank. That I like. We're gonna have to do like a second, maybe a third part of this.
No
be like the
return
of Frank.
I'm around still. God willing, you know.
Yeah,
thanks,
absolutely.
Guys, and good luck with everything. And we will. I'll be talking about you guys behind your back on one of our podcasts.
I appreciate that. That'd be great.
In Montreal soon, and it's a different kind of deal because we are posting it, we're able to put little historical clips. And one of the people we interviewed was legendary broadcaster Red Robinson,
who's
getting on in age and health and stuff. And so, and it was just so neat because he has such a storied past. Meeting, you know, all the legends, and so we put in little clips of those legends and stuff. So, we're a little more produced, which may or not be a good thing, but I'm kind of having fun doing that. So
for sure,
keeping busy keeps me out of jail.
Yeah, exactly. That's the trick.
Good luck. Well, you guys are, playing some great dates with great artists. So. Yeah, you've got something you enjoy. I guess old man advice would be enjoy every minute of it, of the good stuff.
That's the plan.
Try to laugh at the bad stuff and just look at
it. We're not that young, Frank. You might think we're a lot younger than we really are, but we've been doing this. I don't know. How many years have we been all doing this? 30, 40 years ourselves. So.
Yeah, exactly.
I know. But you have to remind yourself at all times to say, you know, take the good and really enjoy, appreciate it, because it goes by pretty quick.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah. You know, when I look at Trooper, it was 5 years. And I look at coming out of university, I remember thinking, well, I'll give this a go until I'm as old as John Lennon is, because he was like 21, right? And it's like,
oh, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's really old. So by the time I was 21, it's like, well, John Lennon is now 25.
Yeah, exactly.
And what's that guy from the Stones, the Jagger guy? You know?
Yeah.
So you keep going. But I added it all up, and it wasn't, the rock and roll part of it wasn't as long as I thought it was. It just seemed to take forever at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, because you're just always on the road and suffering.
Yeah.
Oh, that was only a year.
Exactly. Yeah, you're right. Try and find the positive. Okay.
Thank you so much, Frank Ludwig, everybody. Thank you, everybody in the audience, for joining us.
Nice to
be. We will see you next week at the same bat time, but same bat channel.
Yes.
And
next week, Gord Depp from the Spoons, I think.
Yes.
Yes.
Excited about that.
Yeah. That'll be fun.
Yep.
Okay, gang. Thanks, Frank. Big love.
Love you guys.
Take care.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
And cut.